From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Carol Bousquet with the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, August 20th, 2025. ICE has arrested a Congolese pastor living in Westbrook. According to friends and family, he was an active member in multiple church communities. Ari Snyder has more.
Michael Shimankinde was arrested by ICE last week, according to a GoFundMe page set up by his family. He's now being held at Stratford County Jail in Dover, New Hampshire. Shimankinde is a pastor at his own church, but he has also been a regular presence in the pews at Life Church in Gorham, according to assistant pastor Tom Piquino. Piquino says Shimankinde called him last Wednesday to say ICE agents were following him home from work.
He was a little nervous, but we talked it through, prayed, and he felt better after we talked.
In a written statement, an ICE spokesperson said Shimankinde entered the U.S. in 2016 and overstayed a tourist visa and was arrested during a, quote, targeted enforcement operation. A fundraiser to help cover his legal fees and basic needs for his family had raised over $23,000 as of Wednesday afternoon. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Ari Snyder.
Town councilors in Gorham Tuesday night agreed to proceed with a purchase and sale agreement with Amazon, a potential first step in bringing the online retailer to southern Maine. The measure allows Gorham to sell 94 acres off Main Street to Amazon for $4 million. Some town councilors, including Seven Siegel, said at a meeting last Tuesday night that they were conflicted about the town doing business with Amazon.
We constantly talk about bringing new businesses into Gorham, and it feels like a devil's bargain here. You know, you can get a large business that's going to bring in, honestly, quite a bit of property tax revenue, but it's Amazon.
It's not clear what the company intends to do with the land, but town officials say if the sale goes through, it will be up to Amazon to design a project and submit it for public feedback and permitting. The Asian long-horned tick has been found in Maine for the first time. The University of Maine and state officials have confirmed the presence of the invasive tick in Cumberland County. The Asian long-horned tick feeds on livestock, wildlife, pets, and people, but it's not clear if it carries diseases commonly found in other tick species. Griffin Dill, director of the UMaine Extension Tick Lab, says the tick has been found in 20 other states, including Connecticut and Rhode Island.
It has not yet been found in New Hampshire, so kind of making that leap from southern New England all the way up to Maine leads me to believe that it's possible that it was brought in on, a migratory bird or someone's pet that had been out of state.
Dill says further research must be done to understand if this species can spread pathogens. Summertime in Maine can bring welcome sunshine and warmth, but under certain conditions, hot and humid weather can cause problems for the body. Anything from minor muscle cramps and skin rashes to more serious issues like dizziness, vomiting, and seizures. Athletes are among those who are most at risk. As part of our collaboration with the Portland Press-Herald, Patty White takes us to the Beach to Beacon 10K race in Cape Elizabeth, where medical volunteers frequently treat heat illness.
Just steps away from the finish line, a large tent is transformed into a makeshift emergency room. But this one is equipped differently than what you see in a hospital. It's lined with two rows of big black plastic tubs, the kind used for horse troughs, filled with water. These are ice baths to cool down runners who get heat stroke. And as nurse Lynn Landry goes over treatment protocols with medical volunteers, she warns that heat stroke patients can be belligerent.
These people are combative. They will spit. They will kick. They will bite. They will headbutt. They think they're being attacked.
Heat stroke can develop when the body's core temperature rises to 104 degrees or higher. It can be caused by hot weather as well as physical exertion. So even though this is an unusually mild August morning, medical tent team leader Shelley Weinstein says it's still something volunteers need to be on the lookout for.
What people have to remember is you can have people with heat stroke even as cool as 60 degrees because they're pushing really hard. And so their muscles are actually heating up. It's kind of like a roast in the oven. It's cooking from the inside.
And it's life-threatening, says Mylon Cohen. He's a cardiologist at Maine Health and medical director of the Beach to Beacon.
The human body was only really designed to operate within a certain temperature range. And when it gets super cold or super hot, things don't work right, just to put it very simply.
The brain, heart, and other organs can shut down. Cohen says early treatment is key, and that's where the ice baths come in.
Okay, all right, ice brigade.
Volunteers line up outside the tent to grab bags of ice from a truck and drop two next to each tub. As runners cross the finish line, nurse Arlene Wacker and other medical volunteers look for anyone who shows symptoms of heat illness.
Well, you look at the face, and the face tells all. And if they're not comprehending and they're not really standing,
they're then escorted inside the medical tent where volunteers check their core temperature. Medical services coordinator Chris Triano says there's only one tried and true method.
Having a thermometer that's going to go in the rectum, that's the only way to do it.
Which doesn't always go over well with runners who are suffering cognitive symptoms from heat stroke.
Yeah, so they couldn't get a temperature reading for me pre-going into the ice bath because I was extremely combative with medical staff.
Dan Brett got heat stroke running the Beach to Beacon 2 years ago.
First 4 miles was great. Last 2 miles is when I started kind of getting in trouble.
Looking back, Brett thinks wearing compression shorts and over-the-ear headphones contributed to his body overheating. He had also recently recovered from COVID. But at the time, he figured he was just pushing hard. After he crossed the finish line, he passed out.
I woke up in the medical tent. I was in the ice bath, and I was kind of blacking in and out at that point, but sort of one of the few things I remember is asking if I was going to die.
When Brett finally agreed to have his temperature taken, it was nearly 108 degrees. He was so sick, he had to be transported to a hospital.
It can definitely happen at any age, you know, even people who think they're in their, you know, 20s, fit, whatever, absolutely can happen.
Brett fully recovered, and he raced in this year's Beach to Beacon. And while he avoided a trip to the medical tent, others weren't as lucky.
He looks pale. He looks a little disoriented.
John Jardine, an emergency medicine physician from Massachusetts, watches as other volunteers help a distressed runner onto a cot. His core temperature is 105 and climbing.
107.
Up to 107.
Volunteers lift the man and place him in an ice bath.
Here we go. It's going to be cold.
They dip cups into the icy water and pour it over him. After soaking for several minutes, Jim Gensheimer's core temperature cools, and pretty soon he feels much better.
I mean, I knew I was going to end up pushing myself to like an uncomfortable place, like more so with my legs. Did not expect that I'd be close to a heat stroke.
While the volunteers here get practice treating athletes, medical services director Chris Triano says it's valuable experience that can be applied to the general public.
And that really can make a difference, because as you know, you're going to see a lot more of these issues outside of athletics with climate change.
So far this year, more than 300 people have been treated in Maine emergency rooms for heat-related illnesses. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Outdoor workers in Maine endure wind, rain, snow, and cold, but many would say heat is the worst and the most dangerous. As Maine's summers get hotter, more focus is being put on preventing heat illness on the job. But as Peter McGuire reports, there are still no federal or state rules to keep workers safe in sweltering conditions.
Brittany Sisco clearly remembers the first time she got heat stroke on the job.
It was just another hot day to me. It was just another day where, man, I'm feeling sluggish. And I wrote it off like I didn't sleep right that night, or I overexerted myself the day before, so I was extra tired.
Before she realized there was a problem, it was too late. She says the episode completely drained her. It took a trip to the hospital and 3 days of rest to recover.
I didn't register the severity of what heat could do until I'm the one who tipped over.
These days, as a foreman at a solar farm under construction in Harrison, Sisco doesn't mess around. Water, rest, and shade are obligatory on our worksite. She hands out electrolyte packs and pink Himalayan sea salt to add to water. Cisco says the company she works for understands heat hazards, but that's not always the case.
I do not feel a lot of companies in the state take that as serious as what they need to, because heat stroke is just as bad as you breaking your hip, if not worse. Because once you get heat stroke, it seems like you get it every time thereafter.
Nearly 1,000 U.S. workers died from heat illness in the last 30 years, according to the Environmental Protection Agency. And Rebecca Lincoln from the Maine Center for Disease Control and Prevention says a review of state emergency room data indicates labor is a leading factor in heat illness. Lincoln says researchers digging into the numbers made some assumptions about what people were doing when they got sick.
People would be out running or playing sports or going on a hike or at the beach, and we do see a lot of that. But what we saw most of, among all the different risk factors that we were looking for, was working, that people were working when they got sick.
Further south, people acclimate to persistent heat, says Michelle King, a safety specialist at the Maine Department of Labor. In Maine, sudden temperature spikes like an intense June heat wave can stress people used to laboring in cooler temperatures.
We had, you know, 50, 60 degree days, and then we had that one hot day that was just like off the charts. So acclimatizing people, you can't acclimatize to that one day.
Employers have a general duty to keep workers safe, but there are no specific protections for workplace heat. Federal regulators want to change that. A rule proposed last year would require employers to provide water, cooling areas, and other protections when the heat index reaches 80 degrees. King says that's a lower temperature than you might expect.
I don't think we recognize that threshold well in Maine, because when they say 80 degrees, they're not recognizing the fact that it could be 70 degrees, but if the humidity is high, it's making us hit the 80 degrees.
The federal rule is still pending, but Rod Stanley says heat hazard awareness is growing. Stanley works for MEMC, Maine's worker compensation insurer. He says claims for heat illness have skyrocketed from only a handful in 2018 to more than four dozen last year.
You know, we tend to be pretty tight with sharing, you know, any information around specific claims or, you know, but I can tell you for certain it's the, you know, it's the construction industry. It's the people that are out in the sun all day long.
At Brittany Cisco's job site in Harrison, it's just after 9 a.m., but the sun is blazing. We're at the start of a three-day heat wave with temps over 90 degrees. It's familiar to James Smith. He's setting up erosion fencing around a freshly cleared woodlot for a solar farm.
I used to work in Florida on roofs. I think I'll be all right.
He takes some common sense precautions to stay safe.
I take breaks when you need to. If you get dizzy, you know, sit in the truck, AC, drink a lot of water. That's about it. Eat a lot of salt.
Ryan Martin works right alongside Smith.
I've had heat stroke and heat exhaustion several times. Part of the game.
Martin says heat ranks among the top workplace hazards, along with slips, trips, and falls.
I don't think it's recognized nearly as much as it should be.
Unless you got boots on the ground, then you don't have a clue.
For them, getting through the next few days means water, rest, shade, repeat. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Peter McGuire.
And coming up next week, we'll hear reporting on how heat waves affect Maine's wildlife. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join Erwin Gratz for Morning Edition starting at 5 a.m. I'm Carol Bousquet. Thank you for listening.